Welcome to the Women in Maintenance podcast, a place where women in maintenance share their stories. I'm your host, Caitlin Young-Gilbert, CMRP. I'm the chief of staff over at Upkeep and founder of the maintenance community at upkeep.org. Each episode, we'll be meeting with female leaders in maintenance to discuss their career journeys and share best practices to help other women within our community thrive. Today, we're excited to have Christine Witte on the show. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much, Caitlin. I'm excited to be here.
Christine is the Director of Product and Services at Seam Group, with over 10 years of experience in managing and growing product lines, new markets, and distribution channels. Christine is passionate about building strong customer relationships and developing performance-driven teams with asset safety, reliability, and maintenance. Welcome again, Christine. I'm so excited to be chatting.
Me too. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be here. And it's been really cool to see the maintenance community grow to where it is today, both the maintenance community and Upkeep. I was one of the first members of that platform, and to see how it scaled and then to look at like my network of global maintenance and reliability leaders has been awesome. So thank you for letting me be a part of it. And thank you for all you guys do to promote the safety, reliability, and maintenance industry.
Of course, when we first launched this Women in Maintenance podcast, I told my team you were one of the first people I wanted to have on the show. Ooh, just because When we launched the maintenance community, we were really on Slack. We were really scared that it would just be us asking questions and maybe a few answers every once in a while. Yeah. And you were one of the very first members that started conversations or like tagged other people and asked them questions and like really understood the power of that space. And people took your example and modeled it. And so we're really grateful for you being like one of the first leaders in the Slack group. And I don't know if I've ever even thanked you for that. So thank you for doing that for us.
You do not need to thank me. It has been an honor. And I've learned so much from that collaborative platform. And it's, I feel like that is really the only way to go. It's diverse. It's inclusive. People are encouraging, you know, just knowledge sharing, and to be able to have that at your fingertips and be able to collaborate with those folks has been something that has helped me develop as a professional, but also as just a human. I've met so many great people that I've learned from and I consider mentors. So thank you.
I love it. Let's start off a little bit hearing about your background. Can you share with the listeners a little bit more about you, your background, how you're introduced to the field of maintenance and reliability?
I would love to. I was thinking about how to answer this question, and I could be very high level and not get too personal, but I thought it was relevant to share something that's a little bit personal for me and would probably be very relevant for the conversation today. So predominantly my career was in healthcare. I spent about 15 years in the healthcare sector and about 10 years of them working for a global manufacturer of medical mounting, which is essentially all of those ergonomic mounts and booms you see coming from walls and ceilings in the healthcare space that hold the actual technology. So they are the host of the technology. They are the integrator. Learned a lot about patient to clinician experience, safety, ergonomics, durability, maintenance of the devices themselves and the integration points, and really became curious about how all of those things come together to either improve or drive efficiencies by way of workflows. And having spent so much time in hospitals integrating technology, I felt very comfortable, but also curious about the different devices in the NICU when my triplet daughters were born premature and we found ourselves in the NICU for the first few months of their life. And looking around at all the different machines and equipment that were keeping my daughters healthy and alive, but also looking at ways to improve, you know, how they were integrated, looking at traffic patterns and looking at shorter or smaller clinicians having to reach and having to reach over babies and just the different things you could do to either improve or impede upon, you know, a safe working environment. And so that curiosity took shape into really me wanting to understand, you know, how these projects are set up, how different ways of managing the technology integration, the assets themselves could either drive efficiencies or they could, you know, completely derail clinical care and clinical outcomes. And so when my daughter was having some challenges with her retinal development, we found out that one of the devices that was integrated at her bedside had been miscalibrated during a preventative maintenance. So if we think about that, let's take a step back. Let's think about preventative maintenance inherently is designed to try to find a problem so that there is not an imminent failure. But when scheduled downtime and you take apart a machine and you're invasive with that machine, you're actually just as likely to cause a problem as you are to find one and ultimately solve one. And so when we found out that Lily was getting, essentially what this machine was supposed to be doing was giving off a certain amount of oxygen into a CPAP, and it was set on room air, which is 21%. So that's just what you and I breathe, but it was miscalibrated during that maintenance. And so that 21% was upwards of 70% oxygen, which is actually toxic for retinal development. And upon finding that out, that curiosity about where things are placed and how they drive efficiencies became almost an obsession with maintenance and reliability. So that's how I moved into this space and have really made it almost a personal mission to figure out how we can find better ways to approach this space, to approach maintenance, to keep people safe, to keep workers safe, and to ensure the asset can do what it's intended to do without having to do unnecessary maintenance or without having to be invasive to it. I mean, you and I aren't going to go schedule an open heart surgery just because we want to find what we're curious about if our heart's working correctly. We're going to use data and we're going to use the analytics that are readily available, you know, to understand our health at any given time and to make decisions based on that. And so I guess that essentially is how I went from integrating technology to really diving right on into the maintenance and reliability space and have been committed to that every day since then.
I'm so grateful for you sharing how this is a very personal topic for you and that from those challenging times, you know, a new purpose or obsession, as you said, was born from that. And I think something I'm learning a lot during these podcast interviews and my time in the maintenance community Slack group is that for a lot of people in our industries, it is personal in some way, or they deeply care for one reason or another, be it that they've had family members in the industry before that's shown them the way, right? So it's something that connects them with their fathers, mothers, or as you mentioned, personal experiences where their eyes were opened to the world of the importance of maintenance, reliability, and safety. And it's just become a really passionate topic that they care about and really drives their work. And that's something that I think we don't tell the public or children or teenagers growing up in the world that, you know, they're only thinking about maybe like the actual ins and outs of the job or the tools you use. But there is this whole storytelling side that we're missing out on of just what is driving people to do this and how your passions as a teenager, right, might not seem like it could be connected to maintenance reliability, but here's the way it could carve into that. And I think that comes into my next question for you. So I know something you are really passionate about also is introducing the field of maintenance into early childhood education, perhaps in the form of apprenticeships in high school. So can you just talk a little bit more about how can we do that? How do we introduce more people into this?
So SMRP, Service Maintenance Reliability Professional Organization, which I know that Upkeep is very involved in. And actually, are you going to be at the show next week, the national show, Caitlin?
I won't be there personally, but Upkeep's participating.
Perfect. I'll be there as well. So I'm excited to see some of the Upkeep folks there. But I'm on their government relations task force. And what we're doing is we're looking at the real problem of the skills gap that exists across industries, but mostly as it relates to, you know, the service and the maintenance industry. There's all of these technicians that are aging out of the field, and there isn't an influx of new workers that are skilled coming into the field. And so that presents a problem really globally for any organization that has equipment that needs to be maintained and needs to have that technical skill set readily available in the form of a human to, you know, to meet the demand of keeping these machines up and running, making sure operations can meet the demand of whatever they're producing or whatever that uptime is. So the challenge is these apprenticeships that existed even when I was in school, mid-90s and graduating in early 2000, they're gone. They've been replaced with STEM labs, computer labs. All that funding has really shifted to the technology side, which is great, but we've kind of forgotten about the skilled trade, and the funding has dissolved as a result of that. And so I think that what we need to do is, yes, absolutely, as the government relations task force is focusing on, take some of these Pell grants and government funding that you would traditionally put toward a four-year degree and put them toward apprenticeships at manufacturing sites and work with local trade schools to, you know, ensure that there's funding and you can have those partnerships today make an impact. But looking long-term at early childhood education and how do you raise awareness and advocacy and encouragement around this amazing field that we otherwise don't know anything about. I'm coaching the kids U10 soccer team and it's been really fun. in the highlight of like my month and a half, the month and a half I've been doing it. And I actually asked these kids, what do you guys know about maintenance? And, you know, what is a technician? And they really have no clue. I mean, these kids are so tech savvy, but they don't necessarily understand operations or just kind of the break fix that we saw our parents do. You know, our dads probably were the ones, you know, under the car changing the oil or, you know, with a wrench fixing the sink. I mean, it's just a different generation, and that awareness, it's not there. It's not real. It's not transparent. The advocacy for it isn't there. And early childhood educators are in the best position to actually put a stunt to this rising gap and to build that awareness, but also advocate for parents and for communities to come in and say, hey, these are viable jobs that are highly paid, that are, you know, there's a need and there's a gap. And now we can create that attachment to something that's otherwise unknown to these kids. So that's something I'm really passionate about and that we're working on. It doesn't happen overnight, and it's going to take, you know, a lot of focus, but also an ecosystem of partners to say, we see the gap, we're going to fill it, and it could potentially take us a decade to do so. Those are kind of my thoughts on it.
I love it. It's so difficult too, I'm sure, to think about like when introducing maintenance and reliability to really young kids. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to work. We have to wait many years to find out what, you know, triggered the curiosity or exploration. But I think you're absolutely right that if there isn't even awareness at the basic level of what maintenance and technicians are, there's no way that's going to spark curiosity to find out more. It's just an absolute blind spot that's getting bigger and bigger. So I'm with you, absolutely. And thinking about this puzzle and how we're going to tackle this very complicated problem of the skills gap ahead of us, let's talk about one of the other obstacles imposing on our industry, which is the current gender gap. With a lower percentage of female counterparts in maintenance and reliability positions, you know, what are your thoughts on attracting and retaining female talent in the industry today and in the future?
You know, there's some great programs that like the big Fortune 100s are doing, getting young engineers that are female coming into the space. But even beyond that, I think back to World War II and that iconic poster of "We can do it" or "I can do it," that housewife, you know, flexing her muscles, and she was badass. She was the big muscles. And what was happening was, you know, that widespread advertising by the governments and the industry, that partnership between the two, it encouraged these housewives to fill the gaps in the roles that were otherwise filled by men, but the men were at war, right? You saw that work. That is a testament to the fact that with advocacy, awareness, advertising, campaigning, promoting, you can actually successfully attract and implant women in these roles. And they revere at them. It's absolutely something that, you know, women will be successful at. We approach things differently with, you know, an emotional intelligence and kind of a self-awareness about a situation that maybe a man doesn't, or potentially just a different way of looking at things is how there was some improvements in that space, having women come into, you know, those plants and begin to become operators and not just housewives. So as great as that was, what happened as soon as men came back, it reverted to the traditional way of male dominating the industry. So I think in conclusion, like in my mind, it's not necessarily campaign to fill a man's role. It's campaign to diversify the space and encourage women and diverse candidates to kind of explore the space, like get them excited about it and let them see the opportunities beyond a wrench, because it isn't a wrench. And we need to really nip it in the bud that maintenance is about holding a tool bag and a wrench. It's not. It's so much sexier than that. There's technological advancements happening every day. We need to make advancements in the way that we attract, retain, and upskill the talent. And that is absolutely by diversifying it.
Absolutely. There was a lot of goodness in everything you just mentioned. I think one of the main takeaways I just heard, maintenance reliability needs a rebranding, which I fully co-sign, retweet. We have a lot of the same imagery of like hammers, gears, toolboxes, but like we're more than that as well. And by rebranding or like extending the definition so that understanding is more, I think part two of what you're mentioning, and it just came to me and inspired me, is, you know, you're talking about Rosie the Riveter and World War II and these women joining industry and manufacturing. And you're right. It was this idea of like, you're filling a man's role, and women really took to the call though, and like proved that they can do this. So now with everything we're reading in the news about quarantine and the pandemic and so many women being affected by leaving the workforce, and they will be needing to join the workforce again at some point. Like, is this the time for us to really be doubling down on this rebrand, reaching out to women, but changing our positioning and now saying, you know, this isn't roles for men that we're looking for you to fill. These are perfect for you for these reasons. As you mentioned, the skills that you have or the background that you have would be perfect for this, and really just double down on what we know worked back during World War II.
Yeah.
And reframe it. You know, it's 2.0 now for the new era, and seeing if we can revitalize our industries and bring a whole new like wave of fresh talent in.
I love that, Caitlin. Reframing it and not doing the same thing we've always done, I think is so important, because the industry hasn't really changed much. And so our approach absolutely has to, and everything around us is changing, but we're kind of standing still. So I think that was brilliant and a lot of goodness in what you just said.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. You know, how did you, we're talking about inspiring people and inspiring women specifically to join our industries. How were you inspired to join Maintenance and Reliability? You know, was there a source of inspiration? You mentioned how you were inspired to join Maintenance and Reliability, but I mean, taking on more and more leadership roles in these industries, how were you inspired for that?
I think it was just seeing how impressionable the industry was with a new way of looking at things. Kind of my curiosity, actually, I didn't realize that my questions and the way that I asked questions would actually lead to potential change and to positive change. And after my daughter's injury, I actually reached out to the CEO of Masimo, and Masimo makes pulse oximeters, which, you know, they put them on the baby's foot and it tells you what their O2 sats are. And that is very relevant in the NICU because you want to keep a certain oxygen saturation. If you're too low, that is detrimental, but really you should never be at 100% because you desat all day, you know, even you and I, 95 to 100. So they look at that, and that's how they make the judgment call on the blender. So when I told Joe Chiani, Lily's story, that, hey, Joe, you know, your pulse oximeter, when you recreated that and made it appropriate for the population that it's measuring, neonatals, babies that wiggle and squirm and aren't reliable, you made sure that it wasn't failing due to wiggling. You made it fit the baby. Well, what about if the blender isn't reliable? And within a few days, he responds like, I never thought about that link in the chain, because predominantly it was just the pulse ox that was reading, and that's how they were making decisions. And so that curiosity, but then sharing the story and asking those questions, have now led to more people knowing, hey, there's more to the story. There's more that can go wrong, but there's also a better way to approach potentially the relationship between these value stream of patient care. And that can apply to maintenance, to a plant, to manufacturing as well. How does this particular machine communicate or influence this particular part of operations or this particular person? And looking at those things, and when you see something, say something, because it actually does influence. So that frequent curiosity and that kind of inherent nosiness, I think, is what inspired me to stay in the field and to continue to investigate, because I think that there's positive change waiting to happen everywhere you look. And that's something that I don't think I could necessarily turn my back on at this point. I'm just too passionate about it.
I think that really speaks to the importance of diversity in all fields and our fields specifically. And I don't mean just like gender diversity or anything like that. I mean, just diversity in thinking, right? Just the more perspectives we have on one issue, and we aren't hiring people who are just like us and think in the same process, I'm sure that whole company, you spoke to a CEO, he never considered the part of the process that you brought up. And who knows if there was more like diversity in thinking or perspective, like how long it would have taken before that would have been brought up. So what I'm trying to get at is that's a perfect example of, we need people to ask different questions, and to find people who ask different questions than you, you've just got to make sure that people in your business, community, team, your network think differently than you, because it's okay that we think differently because we get to solutions faster.
Absolutely.
That's my soapbox. Yeah. That's my soapbox. I just was very inspired by what you said.
Yeah, no, thank you. I totally agree with you. I really believe that. And it's one quick example is, even in that particular hospital, they are very much encouraged to question things that don't seem right. And unfortunately, in Lily's case, even though it didn't seem normal that a baby, when this has never happened, was satting at 100% the entire time, they called her super baby and no one questioned it. But you have nurses that are all the same. There was not a very diverse team there of people that would look at that and say, something's not right. And we could see something's not right. And we're assuming it's just some anomaly. So to your point, diversity is not just important for getting women into positions that are male dominated, getting men into positions that are women dominated, getting men into nursing, into clinical care. I think it's across the board, we are better, we're more powerful, and we perform, you know, to the highest potential and solve problems, you know, beyond what we ever thought was possible when we are diverse and inclusive.
Absolutely agree. All right, last question for you, Christine. You've made tremendous strides in your career as a leader. I think following that investigative spirit, as you mentioned, your passion for asking questions and really caring so deeply. What advice would you give to the next generation of female leaders in our space?
I'm going to steal a line from someone I met recently, and it's be a constructive troublemaker. Be okay questioning the status quo and believe in your intuition, especially as a female. We have an intuition. We have this emotional intelligence about us that is a big advantage when it comes to being a leader and letting your soft skills to take reign over a situation and not being afraid to influencing people with your kindness, with your compassion, and with your transparency. You know, don't be afraid to let those qualitative skills soar. And again, to be a constructive troublemaker, because when you do, you start to see that that different way of thinking and that that questioning the status quo only leads to things being done differently and likely much better than they've been done in the past.
I am immediately writing be a constructive troublemaker on a post-it note from my desk.
Right?
It's a good one. Thank you, Christine. Mm. All right. Well, thank you again so much, Christine, for joining us. I really appreciated
the
conversation.
Caitlin.
Of course.
Yeah, me too. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for all you're doing in Women in Reliability. I will be following you and listening to your upcoming podcasts and sharing them as well. It really has been a pleasure. So thank you.
You're so welcome. How can our listeners connect with you?
LinkedIn is always good. Christine O'Rourke Witte, C Witte, that's C-W-I-T-T-E at seamgroup.com. seamgroup.com. You can text me 704-221-0055. My kids sometimes have my phone. So if you get a picture of like a cat or a bunny or something weird that they text back, they have all these weird animals they've been texting me from their iPads. If you get a weird text back, then just give it some time and I will be back to that phone if I can find it.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your willingness to connect. I mean,
thank
as directly
Caitlin.
As possible, it seems. That's fantastic. And
awesome.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in today for our latest episode of Women in Maintenance. My name is Caitlin Young Gilbert. I'm the Chief of Staff at Upkeep and founder of the Maintenance Community. You can connect with me on LinkedIn under Caitlin Young Gilbert. And as Christine mentioned, you can find she and I both in the Maintenance Community Slack group over at upkeep.org. Feel free to ask us any questions that you might have from today's conversation or suggest future topics. And I hope to connect with you all soon. Until next time, thank y'all.
Bye.